Hello, Vet Blast podcast listeners. Did you notice you can earn 0.25 CE credits with this podcast? After listening to this podcast, head on over to dvm360.com/flex and then sign in or register for a free account. Then select the podcast and follow the online prompts to claim your CE.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We want to thank our friends from Elanco for supporting this great conversation, which is a two-parter, a surgeon's perspective on current trends for the management of osteoarthritis. And joining us is our wonderful friend, OrthoVet Consulting founder, Dr. David Dykus. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back. Like always, it's always a good time to be able to chat with you.
Absolutely. Well, we know canine osteoarthritis is a complex disease that impacts quality of life for many of our canine patients. And part one of this podcast series will focus on the epidemiology of this disease, the importance of a proactive approach to diagnosis, and we will introduce a standardized staging tool to be utilized in general practice. So a little bit of information about our wonderful friend here, Dr. Dykus. He attended Mississippi State University's College of Veterinary Medicine for his veterinary degree, Auburn University for a small animal rotating internship, and Mississippi State for a combined surgical residency and master's degree. Dr. Dykus is frequently asked to lecture locally, nationally, and internationally. He's given over, 200 continuing education lectures and taught over 125 laboratories. He has published numerous research articles and authored or co-authored several book chapters. He's the co-editor of the textbook Complications in Canine Cranial Cruciate Ligament Surgery in 2023. Dr. Dykus received the Veterinary Hero Award, right here from DVM 360. Surgeon of the Year, and was named by DVM 360 as one of the top 10 veterinarians to watch in 2018. Dr. Dykus is a frequent contributor for updates in orthopedic to several veterinary websites and magazines, and David has also been featured on SiriusXM's Doctor Radio segment on pet health and orthopedics. He is on faculty for AO, and he is an orthopedic consultant for VIM. Along with being a scientific reviewer for multiple journals, he serves on the editorial review board and is the associate editor for Orthopedics for Veterinary Surgery, the official publication of the American and European Colleges of Veterinary Surgeons. Dr. Dykus became a certified canine rehabilitation practitioner through the University of Tennessee, in 2015. He is the founder and orthopedic surgeon at Fusion Veterinary Orthopedics, where he has a focus on total joint replacement, complex and minimally invasive fracture repair, as well as angular limb deformity correction, 3D implant printing, and arthroscopy. He is the founder of OrthoVet Consulting, an educational consulting and orthopedic coaching service. So thank you for all the great work that you do in this profession, my friend. Really, really wonderful job.
Thank you. I don't know that you took a breath during any of that. You got to catch your breath there.
I did it all in one take. I'm so proud of myself. All right, so let's chat about this. I love learning about OA. So from your perspective as an orthopedic surgeon, what do you see as the top challenges for general practitioners when it comes to diagnosing canine osteoarthritis?
I think there's three: time, space, and money. And what I mean by that is time. Veterinarians don't have a lot of time they get to spend in the exam room with clients. Now, granted, if a dog comes in for a mobility issue, they're probably going to get to spend a little more time. But, 15 to 20 minutes isn't a lot of time to be able to discuss something that's very complex. The other thing is space. Veterinary exam rooms tend to be small, and dogs with mobility issues, we got to get out of the exam room into a larger area to watch an animal move. And so one of the things we don't want to forget is going to be gait evaluation in these patients, and not just relying simply on what information the owner gives you in the exam room. And then, like most things in the world, the third thing is money. The ability to fully work up a dog requires that the client be able to have the finances to do so, which fortunately, when we think about diagnostics, one of the things that is critical but yet still has limitations is imaging. And a lot of times, unfortunately, dogs and even cats don't get the basic aspect of radiographs to diagnose the issue or aid in diagnosing the issue. And we sometimes jump to a conclusion that an animal has osteoarthritis or is suffering from osteoarthritis, but then we don't actually document that they have osteoarthritis. And so I think if we add more time to patients with mobility issues, if possible, if we get outside of the exam room to watch them move, and then we think about what our minimum diagnostic criteria should be, I think some of the challenges in diagnosing OA might be a little easier.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned getting outside and watching them move, whether it be in the backyard or down a hallway. So important to kind of get assessment for their gait analysis. And the other thing that we hear a lot in vet med is like, oh, my dog is just getting old. So can you talk a little bit about misconceptions around canine OA primarily being a, quote, older dog disease rather than impacting young dogs routinely?
Yeah, I think what's very important is to understand that OA in the dog is not an old dog disease. It's an any age dog disease. And the reasoning for that is it's typically secondary to something else. Now, the cat's a little different. Cats will develop primary OA. It tends to be idiopathic. But in the dog, there's usually an underlying driving force. And that's typically a developmental orthopedic disease. Interestingly enough, there used to be an old statistic that said 20% of adult dogs have radiographic evidence of OA, but NC State just published a study in the last 4 months or so where they took about 123 dogs and looked at what percentage of dogs have evidence of radiographic OA. And they found that it was about 40%. But the takeaway for me on that is the age of those dogs was 8 months to 4 years. So here we have puppies to young adults where 40% have radiographic evidence of OA. So saying that 20% of adult dogs have radiographic evidence of OA is outdated data, but also understanding that young dogs can have evidence of osteoarthritis because anytime there's something abnormal to the joint, there's the potential for them to develop arthritic changes. And then the dog, if we look at the causes of that, our elbow dysplasias, our hip dysplasias, those are way up there as the cause of OA.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting study too. I got to take a look at that. And, you know, we talk a lot also as veterinary professionals about taking a proactive approach and a reactive approach in medicine in general, but specifically in OA. So tell me a little bit more about that. Why is it so important to proactively screen for canine OA?
Yeah, I think right now with our profession's approach to OA, we're in a very retroactive manner, meaning we wait on the client to recognize a mobility related issue. They bring their pet to us, we work it up, we diagnose. But at that point, we're starting to play catch up for the rest of the dog's life. And, you know, the sad thing is when we talk about diagnostic aspects of things and understanding limitations, radiographs are important, but we're looking for bony changes. But OA is a soft tissue disease. So if we're waiting to see radiographic changes in these patients, ultimately we're way behind the eight ball. And so our goal should be to move to a proactive approach. And that means early recognition and early screening, which there's ways that that can be done. But ultimately, if we're able to diagnose something very, very early, then I personally think that we're going to have a better chance at possibly slowing down or minimizing the progression of osteoarthritis or even altering the course of the disease. And a lot of our management strategies are going to be more effective and less cost prohibitive to the owner if we're able to recognize things early before we wait till they get to the latter parts of the disease where we're essentially throwing all sorts of things at them and it's not making much headway.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that we chat a lot about is time in vet med and, you know, trying to be efficient and do good medicine, good physical exams in those exam rooms. But sometimes time can be against us. So how can general practitioners work osteoarthritis screening into their normal exam routines without adding a lot of time?
One of the things I think that veterinarians can start using is what's called the COAST scoring system. And this stands for the Canine Osteoarthritis Staging Tool. And so not long ago, AHA sent out a survey that went out to veterinarians that just sort of gauged the temperature of how veterinarians feel about diagnosing OA, what are their strengths, What are their weaknesses? What's their comfort level? What are things they wish they had? And one of the things that they wish they had was sort of a roadmap or an algorithm in how to manage patients. Well, the COAST scoring system was published in 2018. It's open access, and it actually provides a roadmap. We now have consensus guidelines based on the COAST score as to what the management recommendation should be. And so it's not designed to take a lot of time, and it's something that can be incorporated into a wellness visit. It can be incorporated into a puppy visit. It can be incorporated into a mobility-related assessment. And it does get to involve the client, which the good news is they can be filling something out instead of going through the drawers of your exam room while they're waiting on you to come in. but it allows you to develop a score, and then you can take that score and apply management strategies based on that. And it allows, for me, what I think is very important is the identification of preclinical dogs. And these are dogs that don't have clinical signs or radiographic signs, but dogs that were missing when they're very young, and the dogs that we could really have a proactive approach on. But it also allows us to take a dog that's in a so-called flare-up, meaning they've got joint pain, and have a score, get them out of a flare-up, and then we can reevaluate them to see where that score may land. But then understanding as the score gets higher, because it's based on a 0 to 4, that when they're at a 3 or a 4, they might need some sort of daily analgesic type therapy to mitigate the clinical signs and improve their quality of life. And so not only that, but I think watching the dog walk outside of the examination room and watching them walk and trot and moving away from a mild, moderate, or severe grading scale and using a numerical grading scale that everybody in the hospital is aware of, so we can become somewhat semi-objective. We can also measure limb girth to give us information on a crude estimate of muscle loss. And then if need be, we can also measure joint angles, because range of motion is critically important to limb function. Adding in some of these objective pieces of information really shouldn't add much time to the examination, but can provide you with endless amounts of information, especially when you follow up with them 4 or 6 weeks later, because it's sometimes hard to remember where they were, because a lot's changed. You've seen a lot of dogs and cats over that period of time. But if you have concrete information in the medical records that doesn't add a lot of time, then you can start to ask yourself that if you know you're making a difference in your patients when you start to institute different management strategies.
And do you think a lot more clinics are using COAST scoring more in your expertise? What are you seeing? Is the trend going up more and more?
I think so, but I think a lot of it is because of the awareness coming to it. It is something like anything in your practice. If you're going to institute something new, you have to get everybody in the practice on board. And so you sit down, your technicians, your assistants, you pinpoint some of those that are going to be sort of the go-to for this. And once they're on board, and then once you get used to it, it can be seamlessly put into the examination so that it's really only adding maybe a couple of minutes onto things. And my hope is, as we're doing things like this discussion between you and I, and then when I lecture and talk about this, is that as more and more people hear about it, look into it, they can start incorporating it. And I think with the publication of the consensus guidelines in 2023, we should hopefully start to see more and more usage of it, because, you know, veterinarians asked for a roadmap, it existed, and now they've got consensus guidelines to actually make it even easier.
And what about having the conversation in younger dogs? So what tips do you have for client communication when diagnosing OA in younger dogs? Because I know that this thing sometimes feel like a real daunting or negative conversation to have with the client.
Yeah, it really is not fun if you've got a young dog and these owners that are happy with this new puppy. Yeah. And then you have to come in and deliver the news and take a positive situation and make it a negative. But it's not one of these things where it has to be a death sentence. I think we need to flip it around and make it very positive and say, you know, this is a great thing that we were able to diagnose this so early. So now we can take all the appropriate steps to try to slow down and minimize the progression and do all the right things. So that way, hopefully, that dog's not coming in at 3 or 4 with crippling issues. It might be when the dog's 9, 10, 11, but the owners have been invested in things like weight management, which we'll talk about in another segment, or daily exercise, these things that we'll talk about that don't cost anything for the owner, but I think can go a long way in creating the situation to maybe make it such that nothing really needs to be severely done if we're very proactive about it. And so it needs to be brought up as, hey, this is something we need to be aggressive about tackling. We don't need to be scared of it. We don't need to avoid it. We don't need to ignore it until it gets to a point where we then have to start thinking about doing things that we might otherwise not have had to do. And so really just kind of putting in there is saying, here's an issue. It's not a massive issue yet. Let's try to keep it from becoming a massive issue. And if we can be diligent about doing X, Y, and Z, hopefully we can do those things. And instead of trying to paint it as an absolute poor picture, just be reasonable with them and be honest with them, but also be very happy about the fact that we were able to diagnose it very, very early, because I think that's going to give us the best opportunity to manage.
Right. I mean, just earlier, you were just talking about a proactive approach and being more responsible and making those early diagnoses early, especially even in the younger dogs. So I think that's wonderful. So excellent job, Dr. Dykus. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I mean, I love talking about osteoarthritis and so getting the opportunity to do so, it makes me happy.
Well, we got to leave with them with a little bit of a cliffhanger, because listeners, part two is on its way, and we're going to be chatting about treatment options that are out there with Dr. Dykus. So you got to have to stay tuned and check out that podcast. Again, thank you so much for being on, and thank you to our friends at Elanco for supporting this great education and content. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to claim your CE credit hour for listening to this podcast via dvm360.com/flex, where you can register or log into your free account. Then select the CE podcast and follow the online prompts. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And we hope to see you soon. And remember to always stay pawsome.